Yo, 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 what's going on? It's your boy, Kim. Are you interested in becoming a sponsor for the Flying Intellectual Podcast? Would you like us to advertise your business on this platform? If interested, email us at info@flyyoungintellectual.com. That's info@flyyoungintellectual.com. We're waiting to hear from you. Peace. Exciting episode of the Fly Young Intellectual Podcast, where we spend most of our time making sure that we get our mindset correct so that we can attack life and be successful in no matter what we do. We are really, really gung-ho on informing, inspiring, and interacting, and our guest today is no stranger to that. Dr. Rob Kelly, he has an extensive, super, super extensive resume here. I'm going to try to go through some of it. PhD in psychology from Oxford University. He has a PhD in psychology behavioral science. He's a nationally certified recovery coach. He's a somatic experience practitioner, certified NLP practitioner, certified life coach, certified brain spotting practitioner, published author, presenter, speaker, and so much more. He's also the founder of the Rob Kelly Recovery Group, where we will talk about that a little bit more, which he really is out here helping people not only get over addiction, but really program and rewire their mind so that it's essentially you're being better and not just overcoming one thing. It's overall wellness. And I'm super excited to have him. The first time I talked to him, when we were getting to know each other, he's a ball of energy. He doesn't lack for work. There you go. He's all about the strength, man. And we want to welcome to the Flying Intellectual Podcast, Dr. Rob Kelly. How you doing, Dr. Rob?
Thank you, Cam. Hey, guys. Good to see you all. Doing good, man. You know, over in San Antonio, Texas. I know you think I'm from East Texas, but I'm originally from Manchester, England. And yes, loving life, Cam. Just, you know, just living that life that I always dreamt of. At last.
Nah, that's impressive. And your life, it stems from a life of trauma, a life of addiction. But even before we get there, I found it really, really cool that we have a parallel here where you are a musician as well, grew up as a musician. That essentially, I believe, was kind of like your first career. Talk a little bit about that. And if for those who know that are part of my community, I'm also a professional musician, grew up in music. And, you know, I didn't even know that when we first talked. So tell us a little bit about kind of how that's kind of got your life started.
So I grew up in a musical family. My auntie and uncle played professionally in the clubs and bars around Manchester, England. And my uncle came to live with us for a bit. He was going through a divorce. And every night he would open this guitar case and take his guitar and he'd be learning songs for the weekend because he used to change songs around every weekend. Wow. And I was amazed. I was just like, oh my God, every time he'd open his case, this shiny guitar would be there. So I started playing bass at the age of 4 and 5, I believe. And by the age I was 9, I was joining them on stage live. So I was getting paid really good. So I was kind of a professional musician back then and then just kept it going, man. I never became famous for music, although I did play Abbey Road with Elton John, David Bowie, Queen. But I had stupid misses. Like there was a drummer. We used to have a little Irish band because it paid more money in the clubs. And our drummer was Tony McCarroll. And one day he kept saying, I've got this band I'm playing with. Do you want to come and play bass? And I'm like, nah, kind of got my own thing going on. And one Sunday he came in and he's packing his drums down. And I'm like, Tony, we've got another gig at nighttime. He says, oh, no, I'm gonna go up to Scotland with that band I kept telling you about. And we're going to do an audition. And I'm like, if you leave me, famous last words, if you leave me with no drummer, Tony, you'll never play in this town again. And on his way out with the final seat and snare drum, I said, what's the band called? And he said, we're going to call ourselves Oasis. And the rest is history. So almost made it, but didn't.
Oh, wow. That's a crazy story. Yeah. And you know, subtle flex, for those who don't know, Abbey Road, legendary for the Beatles and all those amazing tracks and records, man. I've been to England a couple of times, never been blessed enough to actually get to Abbey Road Studios. I would love to just check it out for historical purposes and I'll feel the energy there, man. But so I going through your story, I see that essentially addiction for you started kind of within that wheelhouse of being a young musician. Kind of, I believe you took like your first sip of beer, trying to kind of just overcome a little nervousness there, and the rest was history. Kind of take us down that road.
So it was a Friday night. It was around 9:30, and we're playing in Liverpool, a big centre there. Me, my uncle, and my auntie, and I was so nervous because it's the biggest crowd I've played in. It's probably about 300 or 400 people there, and I actually froze. I was so scared and so nervous. So we played 2 30-minute sets. So we played a 30-minute set. We came off, and my Uncle P's like, "What's going on?" I said, "So he gave me a beer. He said, drink this real quick, you'll feel better. And I drank it real quick, and I go, oh my goodness, my life changed from there. My whole feeling, I went on second half, I enjoyed it, I was rocking away, it was like Chuck Berry with the bass guitar. It was amazing. So that's when it first started. Knowing what I know now, and I look back, that kicked off my alcoholism. Mm. It took another 20 years, 18 years to really get a grip of me. But that's what happens, because nobody knew about addiction or alcoholism back in the day. Most people, the medical fraternity, still don't know. An alcoholic is not so much someone who drinks so much alcohol, and the same with drugs. It goes way beyond that. But yeah, I mean, I later on went through school. And this is a typical musician gigging. You'd load $1,000 worth of equipment into a $400 car to drive 2 hours to get paid $20.
Oh, yes.
And then one day somebody said, hey, listen, Strawberry Studios that were owned by 10cc is looking for a session bass player. I'm like, what's a session bass player? He said, you can read music. I said, yeah, of course I can. He said, well, go down. He sent me down to the studio, very small. And he said, hey, there's two tracks. I played one straight away, sight reading. Second one, he said, and they give me like, I don't know, £75. And I'm like, what? No packing up, no traveling, no getting up at 2 in the morning. And you've just played me 6 times as much as I, what? So that's what I wanted to be. I packed the road in. I was only young, 15, 16. But I knew studio is where it was at. And I did that for a long time and obviously went on for Abbey Road. But the funny thing about the guitar as a whole is when I put a guitar around my head, I could be anyone. I was confident. It was amazing. If you took it off, I was a nervous child. Didn't really have a lot to say to you. And I found that I work with a lot of music, high-profile musicians, movie stars, stuff like that, is they're all the same. You know, when you take them off the big screen and you're helping them, whether it be addiction or performance, you find out that they're not what they are on screen. So Eminem was the famous one. Nothing like he is, and I love his music, nothing like he was, you know, on TV and on the radio. And that's what people are like, you know. Everyone goes through their own insecurities. Everyone thinks they'll never be good enough, tall enough, blonde enough, or rich enough, that kind of thing. And it's just a myth. So then I got into the neuroscience of it. It's like, why do certain people make a career and other people fail? And I was astounded with what we found out. I mean, we've been tried testing, researching, scientific testing, everything that we say and do on a daily basis, because I knew people wouldn't believe us. But, you know, we have a 97% success rate with over 8,000 patients. 80% now of my work is performance. It's childhood trauma, it's getting confidence back, it's succeeding in life. And 20% is addiction. It's crazy.
Wow. Wow. And I thought that was very unique, because the way you essentially branded neuroscience as that's your ethos. So it's outside of just addiction and just going through that, you're literally rewiring the mind, you're rewiring nervous systems, essentially. I talk about, I guess, how did that kind of evolve for you? What intrigued you to really kind of go to the ethos of, hey, it's more than just a drink, it's more than just a smoke, it's whatever that looks like, it's really within the mind.
Well, I couldn't stop drinking, first of all, and then I kept self-sabotaging. And everywhere I went, they just said, stop drinking. So I stopped drinking, Cam, and I was still the same. It's like there's something going on. Why, you know, a bodybuilder. Yeah, I was a semi-pro bodybuilder. I was a musician. I was a footballer. I mean, I did all these great things, but I couldn't stop drinking. And then, so I knew it wasn't the alcohol. I just knew it was something deeper. So that's when, you know, I became homeless. And there was an instant when I was homeless. I was outside a liquor store at 6:30. I can't remember what time. It doesn't open until 10. But the Pakistani guy, God bless him, inside, used to come out, let me in real quick, close the door, because he knew it was me. And if I didn't have alcohol, I was probably going to die. This particular morning, for whatever reason, I'm stood outside. I've got a T-shirt on, like a vest, a pair of shorts, pair of flip-flops. I'm sweating profusely, and it's snowing. I knew I was in a bad state of affairs. I went in this day. I put my £10 on the counter. He put the bottle of vodka there. And I went, hey, can I come in? And I put my hand around the handle. This is what my reaction was. And I looked at the bottle. I looked at the shopkeeper, looked back at the bottle. I went, oh, my God, it's not the alcohol. That's where it all started for me. And we've done trials and tests of, you know, guys that don't really want to get sober, but they keep relapsing, and that's okay with them. We would ask Alcoholics Anonymous to call us when they knew they were going to drink or use. We'd pick them up, we'd pay, we'd give them some money, do what they do with it, you know, and then we'd take them home. What we did monitoring the heartbeat is we found out that when they had the idea, when they called us, when we picked them up, the journey to the liquor store or the drug dealer and the taking, you know, the most intoxicating part of that was the drive to the liquor store or the drive to the drug dealer. So that enhanced our ideas that, oh my goodness. So it comes up with our saying is what alcohol has 1% to do with alcoholism, the same with drugs. See, Kim, I had never had a drinking problem. I had a thinking problem. Three parts of my brain didn't react like normal people. And every time I built something up, I would self-sabotage by going on these sprees. And I couldn't stop for my children. And the authorities took my three-year-old off me because I'd been unconscious for 2 days and they'd not been fed or changed diapers because I was in a stupor with vodka. And they took them off me. Still couldn't stop. I stabbed my wife 3 times one night because she won't let me finish drinking. Still couldn't stop. It's like no matter what I tried, second child came along, still couldn't stop. But I didn't think I had a problem still until I was homeless for over a year. And then I knew there was something really wrong with me.
Wow. That's crazy. It's so crazy how literally, for me especially, my journey, I've never suffered with alcoholism or anything like that. But what I realized on my journey was that my mindset was not right to be able to become the best version of myself. And that stems from obviously generations of things, right? As children, we kind of innately take on the form of whoever raised us and stuff like that. And we kind of, as we get older, we pinpoint it in different ways and we blame it on different things. Sometimes we completely miss the mark on what it is essentially. And I have to realize that, like, it's not anything else but me, you know, that's, essentially, like I have to look myself in the mirror. I have to be honest with myself, brutally honest with myself. And I think that's a majority of the problem, I would believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, where people are kind of afraid to actually really honestly assess themselves and say, hey, man, you have a problem. Hey, man, you need to do better in this regard. You need help. And I mean, you know, kind of really identifying issues. I realize that in blaming different things, you know, we kind of go along in life and pacify a lot of stuff. A question I really wanted to ask was, I hear about addictive personality a lot. Is there any validity to that? Do different people have addictive personalities or is that kind of a myth?
No, it's true. So alcoholics are born, drug addicts are made. So what I mean by that, before everyone starts shouting at the screen, is our test and research has shown that alcoholics has a predisposition. I'm allergic to the ethanol in alcohol. I had childhood trauma to that. Boom. It's hereditary. You might skip a generation or two, but you can always trace it back. Now, if you can't trace it back 3 generations with no alcohol or drug addiction, you are a heavy drinker. You're not an alcoholic. Now, drug addiction is different. Drug addiction is the addictive personality. We can't just have one of everything. So how do I back that statement up? Well, 90% of people that come into our practice with a heroin addiction started in the doctor's office. So it's that addictive personality, more. So we take one thing, we get used to it, we take more and more and more, and we focus, which also means that when we get clean and sober, we're amazing businessmen, we're amazing fathers, we're, you know, because we focus on something, we go for it. It's either all or nothing with the addictive personality and the alcoholic brain. So most people that are running Google and Apple and all them guys, they have addictive personality. Because it's the best brain to have. But what people don't know or don't understand is we can program the mind. So the mind runs everything. Okay, so you can't see it, touch it, feel it, hear it. It sits inside the brain. Hence the saying, mind over matter. The brain is matter. We can program the mind to send signals to the brain to make sure we accomplish something. So when you get up in the morning, the first 30 minutes of you getting up in the morning is critical to what kind of day that you're going to have that day.
Man, that's you broke that down so eloquently. Addictive personality is not necessarily a bad thing. It's actually what most successful people are made of. They have these personalities where they're obsessed. They're addicted to success. They're addicted to the hard work. They're addicted to the results, essentially. So now if you just substitute a good thing that you're addicted to essentially a bad thing, you just repurpose in the same mindset. That was a eureka moment. Wow. I see why they pay you the big bucks. That's impressive. And it turned my whole mindset, because I always thought of it as just, and not only thought, because people kind of utilize it as a negative stigma, addictive personality. You don't really hear it in a way where it's utilized as a positive thing, or said that really there's a dichotomy of it's the same thing, it's just kind of misplaced. That's impressive. Talk to me a little bit about brain spotting. How did you kind of get into that? I did some light research. Let's act like I don't know, and for the listening audience, kind of get into that and how that's a part of your process.
So most things that we go through, everything we hear, feel, touch, and everything from birth is stored in what's called the subconscious brain, back over here. And the conscious brain is supposed to run our day on a 24-hour basis. Three parts of the brain reset every 24 hours. So the conscious is being here and now. If we can run this, that's when we're at self, where, you know, we're going to be successful. But what happens is all this crap stuff here, you know, how many times have I told you, Kem, you can't go to college like your brother, you're too stupid, you're not clever enough to do that, you can't pull that off, you can't start a pot, all the stuff, that's it, okay, it's in that subconscious brain, all the rubbish things that we hear. The prefrontal cortex is part of the brain that comes up with a solution to my problem, and it works 100% of the time in milliseconds. The only problem to that is it doesn't have to be the correct answer. Okay, so give me an answer, zoom, straight here. What does this say? You're a piece of crap, you'll never be any good, you can't do it, all by our caregiver. It's called childhood trauma. So our prefrontal cortex draws from the subconscious brain, and that's the action we take. So you're going for that big interview. Okay, outside, you're ready to go in, prefrontal cortex, I'm scared, what am I gonna do? Zoom, you're a piece of crap, you'll never be any good. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. What brain spotting does, well, part of it, it does probably about 10-15%, is we delve into the brain and the eye are one organ, by the way. It's not the pupil and the optic nerve and the brain. It's actually one that, as we developed, it came through the eye sockets. You know, it's all one. So what we found, and only because it was done on me, is we have a way of watching the pupil at certain times. And when you get deep into that kind of trance with questions or silence, your eyes will flicker. When your eyes flicker, you've hit upon something in the subconscious brain that you are not aware of, but it's all the trauma. So what happens is, you know, let's say I get there and my eye flickers, we're staying there. We could use a wand or a pen and we stay there. And that might take a minute, an hour, a day, or whatever. Sooner or later, I remember my dad molested me. And they're like, I don't know where that come from. It's such an amazing tool. And it's not been out that long, not like somatic experience and NLP. So it's just one of the tools we use, because for us, childhood trauma is the gateway drug. And everybody has trauma, okay? Now, a trauma doesn't have to be a big divorce, car crash, plane crash. It's the smallest thing. As children, we get told and we get taught. So this is how childhood trauma, just one part of it, works. Young girl, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, growing up in the house. Most times, dad comes home drunk and ends up with a fist fight with mom, and she scurries to hide, crying herself to sleep. That young girl learns something real quick, and that is to listen for the key in the door. If it goes straight in, it's safe. If it jangles around trying to get in, it's not safe. So what happens with that? That becomes a working part of her mind, of that's the way marriages and relationships work. Because she doesn't know any better, yeah? So what happens is when she finally gets older, into her late teens, early 20s, goes to college, and she leaves home, she will attract the same guy, like a dad, that ends up drinking too much and beating her. Okay? Now, I might sound crazy, but do your research on this. To the extent that if she left the house, went to college or moved out, and she met a nice guy, she would self-sabotage that relationship because it doesn't feel good. It feels awkward. It feels strange. And that's how child, we do something today here, and it's no, it seems to be not relevant to what happened here, because most of the time you don't know what's happened here. It's 100% relevant. You're doing this because this happened to you, okay? And it's through time and time and time. It happens every single time. So if we can train our mind to run our brain first thing in the morning, and then we can clear the childhood trauma up, and then we can live in the now, you know, and the drinking and the alcohol and the sex and the porn and the food, you know, gets treated, then we start to live, you know, we get two lives in one lifetime. So, what I mean, this is my deal, Ken. I opened an office in Dallas about 5 years ago. I signed $1 million on this prestige offices for about 10 years. I don't know how it was long, 20 years. My friends were like, oh my, how the hell do you sleep at night? My answer is always the same. What the hell are they going to do to me that I haven't already done to myself? What are they going to do? Take the office off me? I'll get another one. Are they going to cancel Christmas? No. No. So we get this trauma cleared up and we live this life. Now, do we have problems every day? We do. Like, I don't have bad days. I do have better days than others. But how can I have a bad day from homeless to living on a bench for over a year to a beautiful life I have now? So then it becomes, what's my perspective on life? What's my thought pattern? And then going forward, the only thing I've got to be careful of is complacency, you know, which human beings suffer from. And, you know, it sounds easy because it is easy. Most people are stuck in this traumatic childhood that they can't get away from, and they never take the chance. It's like, if you have a plan A, amazing. But if you have a plan B, just in case A, throw plan A away. It's never going to work. So I'm with Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the 70s, and I pick him up from the airport. He's doing a show in Manchester, and I get nominated to pick him up, take him back to the hotel room, and I'm chatting. And this is what set it off for me as well. And he couldn't speak English, very broken, not like it is today. And we got chatting, and I said, the bodybuilding is all good, man. But I mean, after that goes, what are you going to do? I mean, and he said, I'm going to do three things. No, I'd like to. I'm going to do three things. I said, okay. He said, first of all, I'm going to become the highest paid movie actor in the world. Well, I nearly fell off the chair, Ken, laughing, because the guy couldn't put a proper sentence together. Check. So what else? I'm going to be a governor in the United States, preferably California. Check. And the third one blew me away. He said, I'm going to marry into the Kennedy family. Check, check, and check. See, you never have a plan B. There's only plan A that matters. And people will tell you all the time, Ken, have a backup, have a plan B. Bullshit. Throw the plan A away. It ain't never going to work, guys. And when you realize the power your mind has and the power the universe has and how things really work in our body and what we're lacking on a daily basis, it would scare you to death knowing what you're capable of doing.
Man, I'm getting goosebumps. I'm not going to lie to you. Wow. Let's stay right there, because with the Arnold Schwarzenegger story, which is impressive, the power of positive affirmations, positive words, reciting these things to yourself. I had an episode a few episodes ago talking about imposter syndrome, which has been something that I'm literally just really, I can say, really starting to step on this thing. And it's not because I didn't know what I was capable of, but because of these other things that I come from and stem from and childhood, you know, I didn't know how to kind of express myself and first of all, admit to myself that I have that. That was the first thing. And then secondly, I wasn't finding ways to kind of essentially let the imposter have no room to really live, which I found out over time through my own therapeutic walks and going to therapy and things like that, that imposter syndrome is going to go to a place where it can occupy, first of all. That's and please correct me if anything I say from a medical standpoint or whatever, correct me if I'm wrong. So imposter syndrome can only occupy a space where it's allowed to. If I'm filling my mind and my energy and my body with positive affirmations and I'm giving imposter syndrome little room to live, it gives myself a better shot to kind of kick this thing. I think the average person probably deals with imposter syndrome. It might not have had a, you know, this technical term until maybe quote unquote recently. However, doubt is something that we all have dealt with. So talk to us about how important is it to kind of really program yourself, and because you use that word a lot, program yourself with positive affirmations, and how does that kind of aid in overcoming not only addiction, but the thing that addiction really stems from, which is a lot of the time the imposter syndrome.
Yeah, imposter syndrome. I still suffer from it now, Ken, all these years on, you know, because you put yourself in places that you don't think you should be. You know, I went to university. My family never went to university. I put in a situation of the first lunch we had when there's five knives, five forks, two spoons. I didn't know what the hell. I don't belong here. But that stays with you. The reason why it's the imposter syndrome is a couple of things, because caregivers, a measurement behavior from parents or caregivers, and the things we're told, and we've lost our identity. Mm. People who lose their identity real quick, especially divorces, when the woman comes out of divorce, it's all his soccer games, his football games, his, you know, we lose who we are. That teaching people to become themselves is an art, but I love it so much because the imposter syndrome has no, let's put it simplest ways, Ken. We get some guy here, he's got a chance of making a business or an empire. We start working with him. What we'll do is we take him to the big houses in Dallas or San Antonio. We walk around it as if we're going to buy it. Okay, it's a bit weird, this. You know, it's come from the projects. Like, I had. No, bear with me. Then we take him to the Porsche dealerships and we test the 911. And we take this $200,000 car and we drive it. We take it back and we come out. It goes back to his business of working. When he becomes successful, because it will, because now his mind, his body, central nervous system has changed. When he goes to buy that car, Ken, his brain doesn't freak out and go, oh, you don't belong this, you don't deserve. What his brain says is, oh, yeah, I recognize this. This is you. So there's lots of ways to preempt the brain to say you are worth it. This is you. And the further you climb up the ladder, whatever that ladder looks like for you guys, might be best parent in the world, richest person. Whenever you climb up, you find out that the guys around you thought was amazing are just winging it. Day by day, they've all got their own shit going on. They've all got their own insecurities. I'm behind a stage at Wembley Stadium. There's probably 50,000 people there when only all 50,000, 60,000. One of the biggest pop stars in England. And he's got like 15 seconds before he goes on and he's sobbing in my arms because he doesn't think he's good enough to provide performance for these guys. You know, so it's about making you realize your identity. Who are you really? When everything closes away, who are you? When the background noise is taken away, who are you? Because I can tell you without even meeting, you're a powerhouse leader, you're strong, you're capable, and you can achieve. Everybody. You see, what happens with childhood is babies are born with two fears only, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. The rest is man-made. Burn. Wait till your father gets home. Oh, them people over there, that Manchester United, you hate them because it's get taught, man. It's racist, anything you want to mention gets taught and it's ingrained in us. And it's about time that shit stops. Be your own man. Find out your identity. Love. I mean, I used to hate when I heard this from my mentor. Love people. Want something for people, not from people. And I thought that's the corniest thing. That's why I get up every morning today. I bless anybody monetary when I leave the house, only because I can. I believe it's God's money, not my money. I'm kind to somebody because you never know what they're going through. I often compliment people, and I try and stay in my own lane. And if this is going on over here, it's none of my concern. And the haters over here that want to drag me down, when you start paying my mortgage, I'll start listening to you guys. But you haven't done it yet, so I'm not listening to you. And you focus. Once you find your identity, clear up the childhood trauma, focus on what you do, look after your family, stay close to God, you are unstoppable. And when I say God, I don't mean, you know, church God. It could be anything you want it to be, higher power, Uncle Jimmy, spirit of the universe. But there is a connection somewhere between our soul and our energy of the mind and the universe. There's a connection proven time and time and time and time and time again. And you start to live life and don't listen to them people around you going, I don't know too much, or I'm not sure you can do that. Don't listen to them, because what they want to do, they want to keep you in their little cesspool because they don't want anybody to really succeed because they're going to be jealous. And when you do succeed, oh, he's a ego, he's doing this. Look at his watch, look at it. Stop it already. Stop listening to them, guys. The reason why you listen to this podcast today is because you are a leader. If you think you've jumped on this podcast today by mistake, I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. You must be joking, because you're not. And such a powerful, you know, Ken, such a powerful man, you know? And you've got both of us on air giving a message, helping people. See, people think I do podcasts to promote my business. I don't want shit off anybody. Don't call me for business. We got enough. I'm rich enough. I don't want that. Give help, give advice, and give somebody the knowledge to go out there and kill it on a daily basis. Encourage them, inspire. We do not get validated as men. We do not get approved as men. Nobody, hey, Ken, that's a nice shirt you got. You're looking amazing, man. You lost some weight. Nobody says that to us. Nobody says that to us. And I want to change that, you know, a compliment. I mean, I had an office in Dallas before I moved to San Antonio, and a guy came in. He was suicidal, and my staff was freaking out. I'm going to kill myself after this, blah, blah, blah. He came into the office with me. I spent an hour with him. He went out. He's hugging the nurses, high-fiving the staff, and he walks out happy as anything can be. And one of the younger nurses said to one of the older nurses, did you just see what Dr. Kelly just did? And she said, yeah. And the young girl went, it's absolutely mind-blowing, isn't it? And the old girl said, yeah. Have you told him that? Oh, no, no. I would never tell. I mean, he knows. He know. Nobody knows. Nobody knows, guys, until you tell them. So compliment some people today. You know, if you can't afford to monetarily bless them, do something for them. Because, you know, if you think that your words don't matter, here's a little story. Next time you're in a built-up area of people, sneakers are always the best. Look down, man or woman with good sneakers on. And as they pass you, go, hey, man, nice sneakers. They go, oh, thank you, man. Then watch him walk away. He'll look down his sneakers at least three times. Now, he's in a great mood, so he goes on to the wife. And she's in a great mood because he's in a great mood. Then the mother-in-law calls. And now you can see where that's going. So you already affect five or six people.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
That's crazy you say that, because I like to play quote, I call it psychological games, but I like to go through life and find ways to like test hypotheses. And it's crazy you say that. I do that every day. Like I'll just, because I love fashion. I always say look good, feel good. It's a part of mindset development. And you know, I'll go somewhere. I'll be in the Publix or something, and you know, walking by and you know, see a nice pair of shoes. Hey man, nice sneakers. And you're right. Like. The ray of hope and the ray of just joy in that moment where somebody's like, wow, you took the time out to say that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's essentially addictive and it goes on and it definitely helps that person have a better day. So that's
been proven time and time again. There was it's on record, this guy's go Google it. There's a guy who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and killed himself. Okay. So obviously pulled the body out, they found out where he lived, go back to his house. When they got into the house, everything was okay, but they found a letter, an open letter on the table. And he says, I want to kill myself because I don't think I'm good enough, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to walk to the Golden Gate Bridge and throw myself off. However, if somebody stops me or says a kind word to me, I'm going to turn around and go home. How many people have you walked past that's heading towards that bridge, guys?
Wow.
How many freaking people when you could have just said, hey, buddy, nice shoes, nice hair, nice coat, nice dress. Now, how many people have you passed walking to that bridge today?
That's a question. That's a question for everybody out there listening, man. And I definitely believe that. I think we are our own worst enemies in a lot of ways. And I think the world could be a better place just by if everybody was thinking essentially of the other person. The selfishness and the self-centeredness that we are taught essentially, I believe, you know, that's part of the reason why in the world we have the issues that we do have. You know, if I think about the other person, if I think about how that other person would make me feel, how they would feel if I say this, or if the other person thinks about how I would feel when they say that, then there would be a line of communication and there would be a lesser of an opportunity to be able to miscommunicate and things of that nature. I find it very, very interesting because the average listener, I'm sure right now that's listening, they almost are thinking like, well, Dr. Kelly, I mean, the things that you're saying, it seems like almost like, I mean, duh, to an extent. Like you're not quote unquote saying, you know, anything that I don't know. However, even if they don't practice it, what do you believe separates you as someone within your field? Why do you think you have this type of success? And it's less about the success, but it's more about impact. Let me use that word. Why do you think you have such an impact within the space that you occupy?
So I would say, number one, education is experience. Once you've been through something, you can show somebody how to get out. When you know what it's life about, you get passionate about stuff, passionate about people, you know? What I do is specialist. You know, there's not a lot of people do what I do, but I believe in people. And I can rewire your brain, you know? Because if we get up in the morning, I'll tell you this before we go, guys. I'll give you three things to do that'll change your life tomorrow, you know, when you get up in the morning. But once you know how to change the mind and rewire brains and cut out them self-sabotaging, and here's the biggest one. I'm the number one doctor, psychologist in the world. I truly believe that. Prove me wrong. You can't prove me wrong, you know? And I say to this all the time, you know, people go, oh, I don't know, you know, I don't know that I can do this. I go, hey, listen, here's the deal. Let's book a court appointment. Okay, you bring all the evidence that you can't do it, and I'll bring all the evidence that you can do it. You'll walk in court with a piece of paper, and I'll have all them files and boxes behind me, because bullshit, that's what it is. And I truly believe that, Ken. I can't. You can tell when someone's not being authentic. I truly believe. We do an assessment where before you go on, or before I go and help you, or before I need to know that you're going to sign on to this 100%. When I go, I make an effort when I get in an elevator to start the conversation. I compliment three people every single day, and I truly believe that I'm the best. There's no more passion any out there than me. Education, knowledge, whatever. You know, I'm 62 years old. Are you kidding me? No. I was 350 pounds 18 months ago. You know, set standards for yourselves. Keep in that routine. You know, bless people every day. Smile at people. Smiling is an art, by the way, because this is my normal face. I scare people. No one's going to talk to me like, so, you know, I have my teeth done specially, you know, to smile at people. And when you believe and you know your identity, which I do today, I'm an unstoppable force, And if you don't believe me, you're missing out on life. God bless you. Go your own way. But, you know, deep down inside, you may know a lot of what I'm saying right now, but you haven't done a lot of what I'm saying right now. And there lies the difference. I'm going to get up in the morning and do this. How long does that last? You never want to join a gym in January. Why? Everybody's there. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. No. How do you carry yourself every day? What is your true identity? What gets you up in the morning? And how many people do you know? Do you know, Kim, I believe in God because of a guy called John that saved me. I'll tell you something, Kim. It comes down to this for me. When I die and I go to heaven and there's these big gates and St. Peter opens them and he takes me to God, you know one thing God isn't going to ask me, Kim? How much was your house? How much was that car you was driving? Do you know what he's going to ask me, Ken? He's going to ask me, how many freaking people did you help, Rob? How many people did you lead into a nice life, Rob? That's what he's going to say to me. And I want to be prepared. I'm on 8,000 now. I want 108,000 by the time I die. And that is the key to life. Once one gets out of oneself and is serving to others, amazing things happen in the brain and the central nervous system. Mm. It really does change you. And remember, guys, says who? I'm going to have an amazing life. I'm going to get up in the morning and go out and kill it. I don't know. Shut up. Not interested. Says who? Because we listen to people. So as babies and children growing up, and even now, what we see is how we feel. I watch a comedy, I laugh. I watch a sad movie, I cry. What I hear as children would believe to be the truth. You know, watch that. Don't put your hand on there. You'll burn yourself. I mean, parents and caregivers give us good advice. The only thing is, it's distorted as we go along. So we don't really believe that can happen. We don't really think that it's like, no, there's a new wave right now, guys. It's proving you wrong. It's even proving the medical fraternity wrong when it comes to health. I will never go to my general doctor for anything about my health. If I break my arm, I'll go so he can fix it. When it comes to health, when it comes to what I eat, when it comes to what I do on a daily basis, no, I'm not going to do that because we've been programmed to do that. So if you look at the four chemicals every day, you need dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins to survive. The dopamine and serotonin are the powerful ones, man, but they're creating the gut. So unless I'm eating real, you know, I'm going to go on diets every day, but if I'm having five McDonald's a week and I cut it down to four, there's my step forward. So I am the best psychologist, coach, recovery coach, performance coach in the world. And you need to believe that, because if I'm not, prove me wrong, guys. Come on, I'm open. Prove me wrong. Can't do it because I believe it.
I believe it. I absolutely believe it. And it's funny, I had a conversation with a friend of mine. He's a business coach, and I was going over some current business practices that I have, and kind of trying to find some ways to kind of scale a little more and or a lot more. But we're not dealing with little here. And see, you're ready. There you go. And he asked me, Kim, what do you want Flying Intellectual to be at the end of the day? And I said, the number one brand management company in the world. And he said, well, there you go. When you introduce yourself, anytime you introduce yourself, first you have to believe it. And if you truly believe it, and every time you introduce yourself to someone, to a potential client or whatever, hey, I'm Kim, and my company, our goal is to be the number one company in the world when brand management. How can we be of service? And just that little thing he told me, it flipped a switch, because it was like, yeah, you have to speak it. You have to, first of all, you have to believe it truly. Now, when you believe it, you have to start speaking it into existence, doing the necessary on the way, on the journey, to make sure that you're checking off certain boxes on your way to becoming the number one company. It's not going to just happen by chance. But with a combination of those things, it will happen. And whatever that looks like, whether it's number one, number two, number three, it's still a journey from where you are now to that place. And it's all about the journey at the end of the day, which is something I've really realized. There's no real destination, right? I mean, you know, the gift that we have is life. And life is about a journey. Every day we get up and we want to be a better version of ourselves. That's why I started a podcast. And that's why we're built. I always say we're the bridge between brand and mindset development. So the podcast for me was very integral in making sure that any guest or any subject that we're talking about, people are leaving, listen, after they listen, understanding that, hey, man, we can be better. There's no ceiling on being better. There's no limit on that. And if we are truly, truly, truly gung-ho on doing the work and becoming better human beings, it starts with us. And as long as you do the work with yourself, within yourself, and you start kind of, first of all, not being a gatekeeper, which I love that. When I first started, when I had that conversation with you, I said, hey, Dr. Rob, what would you like, you know, what would you like from us? And you were like, not a damn thing. I have everything that I want and need in life. I don't even essentially onboard clients like that. I'm recommended at this point. So there's nothing really, all I want to do is just give information and have another, essentially another conversation about this to another audience. And I was mind blown to an extent, but I respected it, because first of all, authenticity is being genuine. And you told me that off the rip. And I can feel that energy. You know, as human beings, we can feel. I can feel bullshit and I can feel authenticity. And there's nothing bullshit about you. You know, and I respect that. And I respect the way that you're very adamant about what it is that you believe. We have a segment here on the podcast called Raise Your Vibrations, where anything that you recommend, whether it be from a psychological standpoint, wherever, give us something that you recommend that will help us raise our vibration and be better human beings moving forward, better people, a better community. Whatever you want to recommend, the floor is yours.
Okay, I've got three things for you guys every morning. Okay, so we only breathe 25% of our lung capacity, okay? That's all we do. So the statement is, the presence of oxygen equals the lack of disease. Every disease in our body, including cancer growths or inflammation, they grow in a hypoxic area of the body, okay? So we need to get more oxygen, obviously. So what I want you to do, one of the reasons nobody's woke up laughing ever is lack of oxygen. So in a normal circadian rhythm sleep pattern, between the hours of 2 and 5 o'clock is where our body is in full repair. It's also where most people die of natural causes, because the body is at its lowest repairing. So we have no oxygen. So when we wake up, we're deficit in oxygen. I want you to get up tomorrow. I want you to hold onto your bed, and I want you to breathe 20 exaggerated breaths in and out. Do that 20 times. Hold on, you're going to go dizzy, but we're getting the oxygen. Now the brain's alert. Now the brain's ready for the day, and you're not stumbling in the bathroom going, ah. Now we're ready. We're full of energy. Okay, walk into the bathroom, guys. Two things. Look yourself in the mirror, but from 6 feet away. When we get close to a mirror or a camera, you can see all our blemishes. Subconsciously, when we see the blemishes, when we're shaving guys or makeup, when we're girls, we see their blemishes. That's the way we go out that day to the world. When is the last time you went in the office and gone, hey, buddy, how you doing? We don't do it. So something happens in the optical that when you step away six feet away, all the blemishes go. Say, I love you, I love you, I love you 10 times. Nothing else. Let's stack that subconscious brain and let's get that stuff out once you're working on your trauma. And the last one is, let's change some neural pathways. If you're right hand brushing, brush 1 week with your left, 1 week with your right, 1 week with your left, and left for a month. From tomorrow, the breath work will change your life, okay, with the other two things as well. And if more people did that, and you know it sounds an exaggerated statement, but the world will be a better place, you know? So lack of oxygen, get up in the morning, change neural pathways, and then start believing everything's possible, because it is, guys. I mean, it really is. You know, it's crazy how things are possible for you. And you just need to start to believe. You've got to clear your trauma up, though, guys. It doesn't work with trauma because it'll always come back and bite you just when you're starting to succeed. The imposter syndrome, Kem and I talked about before, you know, just start surrounding yourself with people, with the right people. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. The right people. So you should have no more than three, at the most four people in your inner circle. People that are always calling you and saying, you're amazing, you're fantastic, da, 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 da. I was in San Antonio, Dallas for 14 years. Kept saying to my guys, they're thinking of writing a book. Everyone turned around and went, don't be stupid. You're not an author. That's stupid. No one will read it. I never wrote a book, yeah? I came to San Antonio 4 years ago. And I said to my new friends, hey, I'm thinking of writing a book. And they was like, oh my God, that would be awesome. The other guy said, I would definitely read it. So I wrote a book. But I don't come on here. There's a book out there. Go find it. I'm not selling anything. That's what you said before. I'm not here to sell you anything, guys. I mean, you know, I don't want anything off anybody. But if we do come across each other's path, then I'll bend over backwards to try and help you, because 25% of our work is pro bono, man, and it always has to be pro bono. Each individual therapist, psychotherapist, has to carry a pro bono client at all times. But we are backed up now for like 6 months, but, you know, giving back. That's how I think the keys to life is, Kem, I really do.
I agree. I'm the same way, man. I think giving back is the answer. Eradicate gatekeepers. Pass information forward. Nobody is the sole owner of information. And I believe if there's something that you've learned that betters your life, you should pass it on. And that's how I live my life. That's why I created a platform to make sure that information is fluidly passed on at a high level. Bringing guests like yourself onto the pod. A short shout out to your podcast, Booker Courtney. She was very, 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 very good at, first of all, just identifying things that align with your brand, because you could be anywhere, but I truly believe she's doing a great job there. So shout out to her. And thank you for taking the time out and being your authentic self. Thank you for bringing the same fervor and vigor that I've seen in every podcast. On every interview that I checked out for you, you didn't cheat me. You don't cheat them. And I can tell that you're essentially, you know, the same person no matter where you interact with you, man. So before we get out of here, please, anytime, you know, let the people know where we can find you. You know, let us know what you have coming up. Any pertinent information, please let us know.
So we have a couple of conferences. You have the Rob Kelly Foundation out there. Go find it, guys. Give us a dollar if you can, asking for any more. We got the Neuro Hero in San Antonio in April. Just go find that. RobKelly.com with two Bs, RobKelly.com is the website. Go on there, have fun. There's a book on there, guys. It's the last thing my daughter said to me was, Daddy, please stop drinking. It's on there for $9. If you can afford it, go buy it. You know, if you can't afford it, text me. Or message me or the company, I will send one out, a signed copy free of charge, and I'll pay for the postage. And if you buy it and you think, well, that's just a waste of time, give it to a friend, call me, I will refund that $9 that you spent. It's just about getting information out there, guys. Just be happy and love each other. And if there's anything I can do for anybody, my phone number, 214-600-0210, is this phone here. Call me or text me, even better. And if you're in that place, Kem and I talked about before, because this is about having one foot in the trenches and reaching for the stars. As long as I have one foot in the trenches, if not two, I'm not going to be okay. But I must never forget the person that helped me.
Man, what an amazing podcast. Thank you, Dr. Rob Kelly, for coming on and talking to us about rewiring our mind, which can in turn rewire our behavior and make us better people for tomorrow. If you enjoy this podcast, please like, share, subscribe, follow, tell a friend, the Fly Young Intellectual Podcast, where we inform, inspire, and interact and work on our mindset to be the best version of ourselves. Peace.